ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय वासुदेवाय section of Bhagavatam, 7th canto, chapter 13. The chapter is entitled The Behavior of a Perfect Person, and a particular part of that chapter we'll be concentrating upon is Prahlad Maharaj's discussion with the so-called Python Man. And this is where we hope to reap some valuable lessons, some gems of transcendental inspiration and instruction. So you're ready for the recording. Ready? Today we'll cover texts 11, 12, 13, 14, and 15.
अश्वाप्युदाहरन्तीमम्
इतिहासम्
पुरातनम्
राजस्य च संवारम् मुने आजागरस्य च अश्वाप्युदाहरन्तीमम् इतिहासं पुरातनम् प्रह्लादस्य च संवारम् मुने आजागरस्य च अश्वाप्युदाहरन्तीमम् इतिहासं पुरातनम् राजस्य च संवारम् मुने आजागरस्य च herein. A pea, although not exposed to common eyes. Udaharanti, the learned sages recite as an example. Imam, this itihasam, historical incident. Puratanam, very, very old. Prahladasya, of Prahlad Maharaj. Cha, also. Sambaram, conversation. Mune, of the great saintly person. Aja Garasya, who took the profession of a python. Cha, also. Translation. As an historical example of this, learned sages recite the story of an ancient discussion between Prahlad Maharaj and a great saintly person who was feeding himself like a python. Purport. The saintly person met by Prahlad Maharaj was undergoing ajagara vritti, the living conditions of a python, which does not go anywhere but sits in one place for years and eats whatever is automatically available. Prahlad Maharaj, along with his associates, met this great saint and spoke to him as follows. Om again, Chimanam Visayan Janasana. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Pramanikananda Sri Advaita Gadatha Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama who are serious about spiritual life want to understand the precedents set in the past. It is not that to be spiritual, you have to invent something new, ignore totally the previous standards, predecessors, and examples. Those who are wise, they seek out the most glorious examples, the most glorious precedents, and they take inspiration from those examples and precedents and apply them to their present life. That is why in Bhakti Yoga, this authorized process for attaining the perfection of life, everything is based on Shastra, the authorized Vedic texts. Everything is based on the teachings of the great devotees of the Lord. And of course, everything is based on the instruction from the Lord Himself. In this way, our path back to Godhead can be effective and smooth. What surrounds you today is a delusion that you should reject any kind of spiritual authority, reject any kind of structured spiritual approach, and just be so-called open and free, realizing that the divine is everywhere. Each individual should just be open to the divine, and that is spirituality. It's not a question of following rules or regulations. It's not a question of subscribing to any particular spiritual path. You should be open to everything. Just be receptive. Take a little bit from here. Take a little bit from there. Make your own package. Fashion your own blend. That's the true state of spiritual expression. Whatever you do, never surrender to a spiritual instructor or a particular spiritual path. Reject all that and just be open to everything. The more open you are, the more spiritual you are. This is the delusion that is so present these days. Anything that looks like organized religion, just reject it. It's a barrier to the expression of the soul. Of course, no one rejects organized sense gratification. What is this organized religion anyway? Actually, we feel very complimented if people will say that Christian consciousness is an organized religion. We are trying to get a bit more organized. So next time someone gives an accusation, you can tell them, thank you very much. We're trying hard. Organization simply means coordination for some particular purpose. If the purpose is to serve Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, what's wrong with coordinating efforts for that purpose? No one protests when they go to a club. This is organized. This nightclub is organized. Who organized the DJ? Who organized the music? Who organized the serving of drinks? We can't go here. It's organized, an organized club. Does anyone hear any protests like that? No. Okay. Everything has to be organized to some degree or another. Even just to establish a relationship with one person is organization. What will we do tonight? Let's see. We'll look in the newspapers and see what are the best movies, what's happening in town, and then we'll organize how we're going to get there. Don't people talk like that? We'll organize the taxi to take us into the center of the city, and then we'll organize which cafe we're going to go to or which cafes we'll hop. Everything has some degree of organization. So why is it that when it comes to spirituality, people protest, oh, you're organized? They also protest that Why are you just sealing yourself up in one particular spiritual path? Wouldn't it be better to just jump from one thing to another and take whatever you need from each approach? But people don't live their life like that in a practical way. Why do people, after playing around for a while, try to settle on one person? They try. They may not succeed, but they try. They have that hope that there'll be one person I can settle on and really get into that person. Now, whether or not that dream is achieved is another thing, but still, they have that hope. The ladies all know that. One man. The men, materialistic men, they have the hope. One woman, mainly. And many on the side, you know, for example. Still, everyone is feeling, you know, one thing, one person to focus upon. So what's wrong with us focusing upon Krishna? Perhaps people fear that you'll be missing something by just locking yourself in on bhakti yoga. You'll be missing out on all the other traditions. Of course, why don't they understand that there can be differing degrees of inclusiveness, and it is possible that bhakti yoga includes everything else while going to a level that can't be reached by the other things. It just might be possible. Try to understand, those of you who are trying to preach Krishna consciousness, distribute Krishna consciousness, that this is a big barrier to people today. They have this excuse that don't focus on one spiritual path. It's actually not truly spiritual. Just take a bit from here, take a bit from there. Leave yourself open for everything. But who lives their life practically in a way that they're open to everything? No one eats like that. No one establishes human relationships like that. How many of you in your material days would you just go to school or walk on the street and just, I'm open to everyone? Of course not. There's always discrimination. You want the best thing. So if indeed it is so that bhakti yoga is the best thing, what's wrong with focusing upon it? Now it's up to you to understand how bhakti yoga is the best thing. That's why we have so many books. That's why we have the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. If you seriously chant Hare Krishna daily, you'll see it's the best thing. If you want to understand philosophically, study the books, you'll see how Krishna consciousness is all-inclusive. That's why we don't have to go study every minute little thing, afraid that we might have missed something. Sometimes people say this. Recently I was in South Africa a couple of weeks ago, and I went to the University of Cape Town, and there one student made a traditional charge that by your immersion in Krishna consciousness, you're depriving yourself of knowledge of so many other spiritual paths. And suppose there is something more enlivening than Krishna consciousness, more exalted than Krishna consciousness out there, what would you do? So, I just said, if there's something more enlivening than Krishna consciousness, I'm open for it. Now bring it. Of course, they can't bring it, but they always charge at that. What if there's something higher than Krishna consciousness, what would you do?
I said, okay, bring it.
Of course, you can't know what you bring.
So you can say, okay, bring it.
They can't bring any literature better than Bhagavad Gita, Chaitanya Charitamrita. They can't bring any sound sweeter than the Hare Krishna mantra. They can't bring any food better than Bhagavad Prasad. And they can't bring any persons who are sweeter than devotees. And the devotees are behaving. you don't be intimidated when people say like that. What if there's something better, higher? What would you do then? Just ask them, okay, bring it. They cannot bring it. And then you can ask them, and meanwhile, what are you doing? You're doing simply material activities while waiting for the highest thing to come along. But you have no idea, no understanding of what is the highest thing. You're not trying to educate yourself. We are educating ourselves into one of the different levels of spiritual attainment. We are educating ourselves about one of the different levels of spiritual purity. We're not blind followers. We're busy studying. We're busy understanding. We're not blinded, sentimental. In the first canto of Bhagavatam, I'm going to state that the Bhagavatam is the basis of activities in devotional service. Not only the Bhagavatam, but the Upanishads, Bhagavad Gita, all the authorized Vedic texts give the basis for bhakti yoga. It's not just some kind of emotional creation. So the genuine student of the Absolute Truth, as the first canto explains, equips himself, herself, with the authorized knowledge. And that way, the activities of devotional service are not whimsical. They're firmly grounded in the scientific principles of loving Krishna. Some people point out these things. You're just focused on one thing. But ask them, what are you focused on? We know what they're focused on. The degraded activities of Kali Yuga. But they overlook all that by just presenting, but I'm open. Well, so many things are open that shouldn't be open. You know, a garbage can. What do you call it here? Trash can. That's, you know, when you see a trash can that's uncovered, first thing a clean person thinks is, that shouldn't be open. It should be closed. It's more sanitary that way. Someone who is wanting to be healthy does not keep himself or herself open to germs. If someone coughs, you may be alcohol. I don't want to get a cold too. So therefore the person who coughs covers the mouth, turns their head. No one wants to be around someone who coughs with their mouth open. You don't want to be locked up in an airtight room with someone who's sick. It's like when you're flying on the airplane. Air is so bad, it's recycled air. The airlines are always reducing the amount of fresh air that they circulate in the cabin because it's cheaper just to recirculate the same old stale air. So it's so easy to get sick. No one likes those kind of circumstances. You don't want to be open in those circumstances. How many of you in your materialistic days would go to a party and just, I'm open? Not unless you've been drinking heaps. Of course, many people drink to get to that exalted state, yes? Is that a point at all? You drink so much you just forget, you know, your whatever little scruples you had, whatever little standards you had. You just drink a lot and forget it all. Then you just,
I'm open.
An intelligent person has discrimination and standards. Our discrimination and standards are not arbitrary in Krishna consciousness. We have studied, we're understanding every day the various levels of spiritual attainment. What can we do if the fact is that there's no literature that compares to Srimad Bhagavatam? What can we do? Yeah. Bhagavatam explains everything. It's not our fault. We just, by Krishna's grace, Guru Krishna Prasad, mercy of Guru and Krishna, we are taking advantage of the most precious gem. So don't blame us. Let's say, just as a practical example, a man or a woman finds the spouse of their dreams. Any of you ever thought like that you found the person of your dreams? Now, would everyone criticize you? Why have you latched upon this one person? You should be open to everyone. Does anyone criticize like that? What do people say? Good on you. We're happy for you. We hope it all works. No one criticizes, oh, you're just focused on this one person. What do you think, you know, is pleasing you so much, such a rewarding relationship? That's not good. Be open to everyone. People will be very happy. We're glad you found one person who seems to do so much for you. So, similarly, we are focused upon Krishna. Not in a sentimental way, although it's true, even if you're attracted to Krishna out of sentiment, that is the greatest fortune. But we're actively studying. We study life. We don't blind ourselves. We are the greatest students of life. And yet people think, oh, you've sealed yourself off. You're just on one path. You're following a particular teacher. Now, when they go to the university, does anyone criticize? You're just studying this, and you're studying it from this particular teacher. Why don't you just go to the university and be open to everything? Why you enroll in particular courses? We are enrolled in a particular course. And a particular course we're enrolled in teaches about everything. What can we do? That's the way it is. Because Krishna is the source of everything. One who knows Krishna indeed knows everything. And in the course of serving Krishna, we learn so many things. It's like so many of you know so many skills you'd have never had a chance to develop living ordinary material life. Ordinary material life is very monotonous and very limited. You learn one or two things. That's it. Therefore, you seek your variation through sense gratification. But in Krishna consciousness, the average devotee does so many things, learns so many skills. Just right here, everybody knows so many things. Music, cooking, teaching, preaching, cultivating, gradually learning management. So many things. How to be considerate, how to be compassionate, how to be sensitive in a mature way. So many of you are traveling to places you've never traveled to in material life. A devotee can go so many places and not have to worry about where to stay. The biggest impediment for persons traveling, it's not the airfare, it's where do you stay when you get to the place. That's what soaks up all the money, food and accommodations. But devotees in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, they can go so many places. And facilitate. So many rich life experiences are available. But because people are caught up in the whirlwind of Kali Yuga desires, they can't see these things. They can't see that so much of their life is based on trying for the best thing. They want the best romantic affairs, or the best passionate affairs, the best intoxication, the best car they can afford, the best place they can afford to live in. So we want the best. We want Krishna. What's wrong with that? What happens when people go shopping these days? The consumer is king right now, because most people, before they shop at the store, they go on the internet. And what do on the internet before they buy something? They check out all the product reviews. They check out the forums to see people's experience with the product. Why don't they just go to the shop and be open to whatever the salesperson says? How many of you shop like that? You just walk in there and just are open to whatever the person, you know, staffing the shop says to you. Of course not. You know. You know, this person will just try to sell me the most expensive thing. No. You try to be discriminating. So, that's the way it is these days. The business world, the consumer world. It's not like 10 years ago, before the internet. Now, consumers arm themselves with so much information as they try to find the best product before they arrive at the shop. They're not open to everything. No, they want to understand the precedents. They want to understand the background information. That's how we're approaching spiritual life. We want to understand the historical precedents. We want to understand what the acharyas have said. But people do that when they buy, when they're doing research for their consumer goods. They want to, there's certain authorities, they want to hear from them. What does so-and-so, this reviewer for PC World magazine, what does he say about this camera, this digital camera? That's what it's done. So for consumer life, it's okay. But for spiritual life, no, just be open to everything. See the divine everywhere. Don't be shackled by traditional religions. But this notion of just be open to everything, that is a traditional so-called religion. It's nothing new. Just follow your mind and senses. That is a traditional religion of Maya. Just be open. Your mind, your senses, whatever comes to them. This is a traditional belief. Nothing new. There's nothing new about the New Age. It's old as can be. Same old Maya. Our point is that the intelligent person wants to understand glorious examples from the past, instructive examples from the past, extraordinary personalities of the past, and learn and become inspired. So the Bhagavatam is giving you that. Atrapyuda harantimam itihasam puratanam. Itihasam. The histories, Purana, very, very old. Puranas, they are the collections of the greatest metaphysical experiences, the greatest experiences in devotional expression to Krishna. They contain evidence by example. They don't have everything that happens in the flow of history. No, the Puranas simply give the cream, those historical incidents that will propel your pure love of Krishna. anyone who's learned in the true sense of the word always recites the evidence from Srimad Bhagavatam, always quotes Bhagavad Gita, because there's no greater authority than this. It's not that we're just quoting these authorities because this is our particular dogma, this is our particular sect. Make a comparative study and see. If you honestly look, you'll agree. There's nothing to compare to Lord Krishna's instructions in Bhagavad Gita. There's nothing to compare to Srimad Bhagavatam. If you are interested in the ultimate goal of life, if you're not interested in the ultimate goal of life, okay, that's another thing. Then you can read all your foolish literature and become bewildered. But if you're interested in the ultimate goal of life, then we say there's nothing better than Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. That literature is meant for the swan-like persons, not the crows. A crow can eat any disgusting thing. They have crows in New Zealand? They don't know. Crows are low-class birds. They just eat garbage, anything. In India, one devotee was telling me, he had a cough, you know, phlegm in the lungs. So he was by a window, and he just, you know, coughed up some phlegm and spit it out, and a crow came and caught it in midair. So, if you're of that kind of mentality, then we don't expect you to understand Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita. You're not interested in the ultimate goal of life. But for those who are genuinely interested in the perfection of life, they'll find nothing like Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. So don't be intimidated when people say to you, but are you open to something better? Or are you open to the possibility that something could be higher? So, okay, bring it. Sometimes a few people, this happened to me, a few people will actually bring something. Look at this smoke by, you know, Swami so-and-so. He says, he was Rama, he was Krishna, and now he's Swami Baba. And you can just briefly point out to them. So what does he say? What does he say is the ultimate? What does he say is God? And just so, now, this is completely illusory. Most people won't bring you anything. They just like to, just to upset you. Just to intimidate you. But you're not open. Tell them, neither is my trash can. An intelligent person knows how to discriminate. We're getting the most comprehensive knowledge. That doesn't mean we're proud. No, although we have the best knowledge, we know we have a long way to go for mastering that knowledge. We'll always feel like that. That is the paradoxical nature of Krishna consciousness, as explained by Kavi Roja Goswami and Chaitanya Charitamrita. The more a devotee advances in love of Krishna, the more he thinks, I have so far to go, I have so little love of Krishna. What does Lord Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? Brahma Sutra Padaish Chaiva. He even supports what he's saying in Bhagavad Gita by Shastra. Brahma Sutra means Vedanta Sutra. So even Krishna, just to set the example, says, what I'm telling you is supported by Brahma Sutra. And also Lord Krishna explains in the Gita that someone who is properly using the tongue to speak, executing the austerity of the tongue, speaks what is corroborated by Shastra, by Vedic knowledge, that is the proper way to speak, then you're controlling your tongue. Now, we read atrayudaharantima. That means we're going to get an historical example of a saint who's not exposed to common eyes. Prahlad Maharaj is going to give you that experience. He's going to encounter a saint who, to ordinary vision, looks mad. This is going to be an ancient discussion we're going to hear between Prahlad Maharaj and a great saintly person who's feeding himself like a python. He's, as we learned in the purport, practicing ajagara vritti, living like a python. You know what a python is? Big snake. And ajagara vritti means that the person just stays in one place for years at a time, and whatever comes to him for maintaining his body, he takes. He just doesn't go anywhere. This kind of behavior is of an avadutta. Avadutta in Sanskrit refers to a person who's beyond all the rules and regulations of proper behavior in society, beyond the varnashram dharma. Someone whose service to the Lord is to demonstrate complete immersion in the spiritual energy, and completely ignores any kind of material formalities. We don't do that because that's not the service to Krishna that Lord Chaitanya asks of us. We try to act in such a way that people are attracted to Krishna consciousness. Therefore, we try not to be a disturbance in society as much as possible. Not because we have a great love for social formalities. No. We're not so much concerned with mundane morality in of itself. But we are concerned that Krishna consciousness is attractive for the people. Of course, Krishna consciousness in of itself is unlimitedly attractive, but we want that the people can recognize that. We don't compromise ourselves, but we don't go out of our way to agitate people by acting in ways that are contrary to conventional understanding. But in the Bhagavatam, you'll find examples of great saints who had as their particular service to Krishna, demonstrating how to completely ignore 100% any social niceties and conventions, even varnashram dharma, and just live like madmen. You have an example in first canto of Shukadeva Goswami himself, the narrator of Bhagavatam to Pritchett Maharaj. When Pritchett Maharaj knew he had 7 days to live, you know how he gathered around him all great sages from throughout the universe. And he was hearing from them, what is the best thing to do in your last days of your life? They all had different opinions. Because just like doctors differ in their prescriptions, so many of you have been to so many doctors. Ayurvedic one will say this, the homeopathic will say that, just like doctors differ in prescriptions, similarly, saintly persons differ in their prescriptions. You see, there is first class, second class, and third class ways of doing things. That's always the case.
So Prince Maharaj wanted to know what is the best thing, what's the first class thing to do. So he asked his question. Two questions, actually, but they are one. He asked, what is the best thing for someone to do in all circumstances? And what is the best thing for someone to do who's about to die? Now, these two questions, of course, are actually one, because everyone in all circumstances is about to die. The length of your lifespan is actually immaterial. How long you have between birth and death. Everyone is moving toward death. So in this way, you can understand that Prithu Maharaj's two questions are actually one. In answer to that question, there were opinions. Differing opinions amongst the sages who had gathered from all over the universe. Because there's karma yoga, jnana yoga, there's all kinds of mystic yoga. These are all various ways of elevation, but Prithu Maharaj wanted the best, the ultimate. Actually, he already knew, but as a service for society, he's asking these questions as a service to us. He wanted to produce a unanimity amongst the convocation of sages from all over the universe. There was no question of Prince Maharaj not knowing, but this was his service to all humanities to stimulate the atmosphere so that Bhagavatam could be presented by Shukadeva Goswami. So in this assembly of uncertainty and lack of agreement, marched Shukadeva Goswami. 16-year-old boy, wandering around with no clothes, surrounded by women and children who were laughing at him. He was an avaduta, beyond all conventions, all social niceties. He's very beautiful. When he approached the assembly of sages, because the sages were expert in their understanding physiognomy, they could understand by his physical characteristics that Shukadeva Goswami was a rare soul. So they all immediately stood up, recognizing here is the topmost transcendentalist. Everyone stood up except Vyasadeva, Shukadeva Goswami's father, and Narada Muni, who's the spiritual master of Vyasadeva. Vedic culture is very personal. There are different ways of dealing with different persons. As Shukadeva Goswami entered into the assembly, he would embrace some, he would bow down to others, like Narada Muni and his father. He would, this way, interact with all the different sages according to their relationship. A few were elders, Vyasadeva and Narada Muni. A few were equals, juniors. So that is the proper way of etiquette. And then Shukadeva Goswami took his seat. Prithu Maharaj so lovingly and sweetly began to inquire from him. That is the proper way how to get transcendental knowledge. By offering respect and a sweet welcome, then the spiritual master can speak, and the disciple can hear in the proper state of mind. Srila Prabhupada takes the time to point out again and again during this appearance of Shukadeva Goswami to Prince Maharaj that there's no point in approaching a spiritual master unless indeed you want to understand what is the ultimate goal of life. And unless you inquire submissively and humbly, there's no point in approaching the Guru. In other words, one has to think first. What do I want in life? If I want the ultimate truth, then let me approach, and let me approach properly. Otherwise, there's no need. The inquirer should have firmly in mind, what is my purpose in life? And then, if you want to understand what the ultimate goal of life is, you approach the spiritual master, and then you listen. Unless the approach is submissive and humble, you won't get the answer you're looking for. Or sometimes, actually, persons approach their spiritual master, and they really don't want the answer. They just want to kind of go through the motions of approaching. I know for myself, if a disciple approaches and says, here are the various options I can do in life. What do you think is best? I'll answer one way. But if someone comes to me and says, I want to do such and such. Okay? Look at a different answer. Is it okay that I do such and such? And what can you say to that? You know? The better way, of course, is here are my various options, what do you think is best? And then you can respond in a way that can benefit the disciple. But if the disciple just comes to you and just, is such and such okay? You know the person's completely attached and already made up their mind, so how do you vote for Rudy? That's what you want to do. Okay. Completely different answer you give than if someone approaches you and presents the whole situation. I could do this, I could do that. These are the various possibilities. What do you think is best? Then you can really get into it and do that service of assisting that person, serving that person. But the person just approaches you and, you know, it's not just okay. What can he say? It puts you on the spot. So you say, no. We can learn a lot from Pritchard Maharaj's approach to Shukadeva Goswami. And remember, Shukadeva Goswami was in the role of just appearing completely mad to the ordinary population, but therefore the women and children were following him around, mocking him. But when they saw how the sages received Shukadeva Goswami, then they got themselves together real quick. This is no ordinary teenage boy. Also, you have the example of plenary portion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishuddhadeva in the fifth canto. He had 100 sons. And before retiring from family life, he instructed his 100 sons. Headed by the eldest Bart. Now, actually, his sons were already equipped with transcendental knowledge, but Lord Vrishabhdev was just setting the example how fathers should impart transcendental knowledge to their sons. Actually, the knowledge that Lord Vrishabhdev gives in the fifth canto is meant for those serious about detaching themselves from material life and attaching themselves to Krishna. But just to accept the example, Lord Vrishabhdev taught it to his sons, although they were already equipped with knowledge. After instructing them, in other words, after discharging his family responsibility, he lived like a madman while at home. Just naked and beyond all social formulas. He did it at home first.
And then ultimately, he left home and wandered throughout cities, towns, villages, looking like an urchin. His beautiful body was covered with dirt. And the Bhagavatam describes he was wandering around like a ghost or a madman. Dull as a stone, it could appear to ordinary vision. And what was the reaction of the people to Lord Vrishabhdev? All they saw was this mad person wandering around who looked as dull as stone. And they beat him, spat upon him, urinated upon him, threw stones at him, threw stool at him, threw dust at him. But Lord Vrishabhdev paid it no mind, because his body is completely spiritual and he's demonstrating how to be totally fixed on the spiritual platform of life. So he never became angry. He just accepted. These are all simply different conditions of material life. Praise, blasphemy, fame, infamy. Someone may pamper you, someone may beat you, someone may offer you something nice, someone may urinate on you. These are all just different facets of material existence. What do I care? Got nothing to do with any of it. Happiness, distress, good times, bad times, these things are all external. Sometimes people give you nice things, other times they throw stool at you. Big deal. That's Lord Vrishabhdev's example. As an Avaduta, Paramahansa, beyond any material considerations. And we don't do these things, of course, because we are concerned with how to help people become Krishna conscious. And we acted like that, everyone would be bewildered, and we ourselves would be bewildered. But Lord Vrishabhdev is the supreme personality of God himself, demonstrating this special example. Shukadeva Goswami, special person, demonstrating this special example. Lord Nityananda was also Avaduta. His name is Avaduta Chandra, Avaduta Nitai. He would do so-called wild things. Lord Chaitanya wouldn't tell. So in this way we can understand how there are different types of services rendered by different types of devotees. Actually, Lord Vrishabhdev cheated the people, the Bhagavatam says, because when he realized that by his wandering around, demonstrating the mystic yoga of being a Paramahansa, totally oblivious to material consideration, people were misunderstanding him. So Lord Vrishabhdev decided, I'll just stay in one place. And that way, I'll act in such a way that people will leave me alone. So he stayed in one place, also doing the Python lifestyle, Ajahnara Vritti. But he embellished that lifestyle in a way that only Supreme Personality Godhead could. He laid in one spot, the Python vow, and he would eat whatever came to him. And then when he passed stool and urine, he would smear his own body with that. So this kept the people away. But remember, Lord Vrishabhdev is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, when he passed stool and urine, that stool and urine was so fragrant, it made a perfume scent throughout the countryside for 80 miles in every direction. So next time you meet some bogey yogi who says that they're God, ask them, can they pass stool and urine and make the whole New Zealand fragrant.
80 miles in every direction.
Those are Lord Rishabdev's example. He laid in one spot and did that. And the ordinary people would just stay away. In this way, he cheated them because he's the Supreme Personality Godhead. They couldn't take advantage. They had the Supreme Personality Godhead in their midst, but because of their disqualification, they could not take advantage. They were cheated from understanding they had the greatest person in their midst, the greatest gem in their midst. Now, we go to the seventh canto, where Pallava Maharaj is going to be on tour of the universe. Go to text 12 and 13. Pallava Maharaj, the most dear servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, once went out touring the universe with some of his confidential associates just to study the nature of saintly persons. Thus he arrived at the bank of the Kaveri, where there was a mountain known as Satya. There he found a great saintly person who was lying on the ground, covered with dirt and dust, but who was deeply spiritually advanced. Pallava Maharaj is known as Bhagavat Priya. He's most dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How do you become most dear to the Supreme Lord? Through devotional service. And the dearest devotional service to the Lord is teaching others, distributing others the nectar of Krishna consciousness. What does the Lord say at the end of Bhagavad Gita? Nachatasman Manusheshu, Kashtin Me Kriyakutama. There has never been one more dear to me, nor will there ever be one more dear to me than the one who spreads my glories to others. For Pallava Maharaj, he's Bhagavat Priya, the most dear. Because as you know, Pallava Maharaj, even as a young boy, 5 years old, would instruct his friends and schoolmates in Bhagavad Dharma, even in spite of the great danger of his father, Hiranyakashipu. Now, he's out touring the universe with some of his confidential associates. These are the pastimes of devotees. He's touring the universe, not doing mundane sightseeing, but he's looking for saintly persons. It's like people may say, it's Friday night, let's go out to Courtney Place and, you know, see the sights, you know. Yeah, people are thronging, you know, Courtney Place. Now described as the center of Wellington, not Lambton Key, now Courtney Place is described as the center. So people just go there at night on the weekend just to walk around, be seen, you know, be part of the tamagun and rajagun, passionate ignorance of the nighttime crowds. So Pallava Maharaj, he also goes out with his friends, but they go out looking for saintly persons. Let's go out and find some saintly persons and study them. That's how they're having a good time enjoying life. He's going out to study Lokatattva. Lokatattva means the truth of the world. But you have to understand that Lokatattva in context. For Pallava Maharaj to study the truth of the world, Lokatattva means to study the nature of those who are trying to advance in Krishna consciousness. That is the true tattva. That's the truth of the world. That's the relevant truth of the world. Pallava Maharaj is not interested in studying mundane things. So, you must understand loka tattva in context. As he was traveling around the universe, you see how Bhagavatam has challenged your conceptions. Immediately your mind should think, what? Touring the universe? Who can do that? We don't know anyone on earth now who can tour the universe. Obviously it has to be mythology, all these things we hear. Touring the universe. I can't do it. So it means no one can do it. Well, you're hearing correctly from Bhagavatam. Pallava Maharaj is touring the universe.
In other words, people today are not very advanced in powers, not very advanced abilities.
That's why people who are not humble in mind have problems with the Bhagavatam. Implicit in their opposition is, we are the most advanced people today. No one has ever been more advanced than us. Therefore, they can't understand Bhagavatam. Because Bhagavatam puts things in perspective. You'll understand that the people today are the lowest, not the greatest, not even in between, but the lowest.
So, Prahlad Maharaj and his friends, they see this saintly person covered with dirt, but obviously deeply spiritually advanced.
Text 14.
Neither by that saintly person's activities, by his bodily features, by his words, nor by the symptoms of his varnashrama status, could people understand whether he was the same person they had known.
Purport.
The inhabitants of that particular place on the bank of the Kaveri in the valley of the mountain known as Satya were unable to understand whether that saint was the same man they had known. It is therefore said, Vaishnavera kya mudra vikhena mudra. A highly advanced Vaishnava lives in such a way that no one can understand what he is or what he was, nor should attempts be made to understand the past of a Vaishnava. Without asking the saintly person about his previous life, Prahlad Maharaj immediately offered him respectful obeisances. It is true that when you seriously immerse yourself in Krishna consciousness, people can't recognize you. Some of you may know when you began seriously practicing Krishna consciousness. Some people may have been offended. Your family or friends. What's happened to you? You're like a different person. What they're actually saying is, I don't recognize you anymore. You're not being a fool like the rest of us. Where's your lust? Where's your ignorance? Where's your greed? Where's your madness? Where's your envy? These things are disappearing. I can't recognize you anymore.
Sometimes that happens. They become angry.
They feel threatened. They feel like they've lost someone. It's not the same. You've gone out of our life.
You're becoming unknown to them just by your purifying yourself.
In the case of this Python man, here we read that people couldn't understand. Did I know this person before? Is this person from our town? They couldn't fathom who this person was. Because this Python man was so absorbed in his spiritual development, even though covered by dirt, Prahlad Maharaj didn't really detect, though. This is a great saintly person. So Prahlad Maharaj did not waste any time asking this saintly person about his previous life. He just immediately offered him respectful obeisances. Similarly for devotees now, we're not so desirous at all of disclosing our previous life before Krishna consciousness, except if it helps others to be Krishna conscious. Often people like to hear, what did you do before and how did you become Krishna conscious? Because they're thinking, could I do that? They're also trying to understand how they can cross the gap from material illusion to Krishna consciousness. So if they hear your story, then they start to think, well, maybe I could do this too. So therefore, how I came to Krishna consciousness stories have their place. People can identify and they can see that, yes, it's possible for me to do it also. Other than that, the devotees have no desires and
talk about their life before their devotional days. Only if it can be of an example that we have our famous examples here. Which we tell in order to inspire people that, yes, if that person could change and become a devotee, I can do it too. But just to tell our own histories, we're not impressed at all. We're not interested. Text 15. The advanced devotee Prahlad Maharaj duly worshipped and offered obeisances to the saintly person who had adopted a python's means of livelihood. After thus worshipping the saintly person and touching his own head to the saint's lotus feet, Prahlad Maharaj, in order to understand him, inquired very submissively as follows. This is Prahlad Maharaj setting an example how to inquire. Touching his head to the saint's lotus feet, worshiping him, offering obeisances. That's how to act in order to receive transcendental knowledge, in order to receive enlightenment. Therefore, in Krishna consciousness, we have so many systems and rituals of showing honor and respect. It's all for the point of becoming enlightened in transcendental knowledge. If you want something from someone, there's a proper way to act in order to inspire that person to give it to you. So if you want the ultimate goal of life, there are prescribed ways of acting so that your inquiries for how to achieve the ultimate goal of life will be successful. That's all. Just personalism. That's all that's going on. But Prahlad Maharaj certainly knows how to extract the essence of life. Therefore, he's properly honoring this saintly person, and he's going to ask him questions. Please describe yourself. So in this way, we can enter into this discussion between Prahlad Maharaj and the python man. In the coming days, we'll hear what they have to say. Prahlad Maharaj's questions and the python man's answers. Hopefully, we'll increase in our detachment from material nature and in our attachment to Krishna by hearing this discussion. If they keep reading, it means they're not simply looking to find faults. But if they stop, it means they want an excuse. If you want an excuse, you'll find them. Right, give us an example.
Sometimes we like to read what is the definition of this word? What is the definition of that word? They hear things about.
You're talking about devotees or persons who are just casually meeting Krishna consciousness or casually approaching Krishna consciousness? Who are you speaking of? One should not lose sight of the forest for the trees. to give you an example. Sorry, but I can answer more. One thing we all need to understand is that you understand these books through devotional service. Sometimes Prabhupada would get tired of nitpicky questions. It's like with nectar devotion. He said, whenever you get to, it's not that every sentence when you're reading you have to stop and say, Prabhupada, what is this? Prabhupada, what is that? If you just read daily and gradually it will become purified and the meaning will become revealed to you. So there has to be that kind of patience. But if you want me to answer more precisely as to what is a nitpicky type of question, I have to give you an example. Sometimes close themselves up.
Somebody might present.
Give me an example of how a devotee may be closed in the beginning.
Like somebody might. Without even listening and just to it and trying to understand how it is very difficult, even if it is really just because it's an alternative teaching, it is really can do outside of that.
That's not wrong. That's not wrong. If you say to a little child, this is fire, and the little child doesn't have knowledge but goes around repeating, this is fire. Is the child wrong? Okay. But obviously as the child matures, the child will understand more and more about fire. So that is our system. We say what Krishna says. That's not wrong. But there's different levels of maturity, is whatever. That ripe mango and unripe mango. Both are mangoes, but in time the unripe becomes a ripe mango. But there's nothing wrong with devotees speaking according to their realization. But if they're real devotees, their realization will increase. There's nothing wrong with devotees saying, no, that's not correct. It's true. Now, naturally, in time, if someone's serious about teaching Krishna consciousness, distributing it to others, they'll become more and more expert at it. You preach according to your realization. You're not wrong. It's not that in order to be a genuine preacher you have to be able to argue this and argue that. Present the medicine as it is. That's your responsibility. And through experience you'll become a better and better doctor who's able to administer medicine to patients who don't want the medicine.
If you simply tell people Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there's nothing wrong with it. But what about this? What about that?
Krishna is the Supreme Personality.
It's okay. As you become more and more expert, as your compassion increases, your spiritual intelligence will increase how to instruct people. And you'll find different ways to get at the same point.
Krishna is the Supreme Personality.
Maybe when you're a young devotee, as soon as someone walks into the door, you've come to surrender to Krishna. Here, sit down. Let me tell you how you're going to put me in mind. You're not wrong to do that, but it's just not the most effective way. I used to do that as a young devotee. Some of my godfathers, they were reminding me of this. I used to preach to them when they were coming to the temple in New York. But they're still devotees to this day. I told them, they said, you were fired up from the very beginning. One of my godfathers, Donna Dormarantz, used to come to the Sunday feast, and I would be manning the book table, and I would just... So I wasn't wrong, but obviously I was a new devotee as I became older based on experience. As the compassion increased, the spiritual expertise increases. It's all based on compassion. Because you want to care, Krishna gives you the abilities. So maybe some of you at first would be like that. But then, gradually you begin to realize there are more effective ways of administering the medicine. So you build a relationship first with the person, let the person settle in to come in here, and then you begin to gently tell them some things. So it's not a question of right or wrong, it's a question of maturity and expertise. Suppose you're in a house that's on fire, and someone walks by and just screams, "Do you gotta get the hell out of that house? It's on fire!" What will you do? You can't talk to me like that. Who do you think you are? No, you would be grateful, wouldn't you? Now, naturally, if the person walking by the house, your house was on fire and they knew you, they would probably think of the most effective way how to get your attention. So therefore they might, package their warning to you in an appropriate way. "My dear Sri Yuga, oh best of the yoga teachers, I just happened to be passing by and noticed that your house is on fire, and I think you probably would want to get out of there." But that's because they know you, they understand how to present things in the most effective way. But still, if someone just walks by and yells, "Hey, fool, get out of the house, it's on fire, you're going to burn to death." You're not wrong. But naturally, when you heard that, you probably get a bit of an attitude at first. "You can't talk to me. You know who you're talking to." So it's not a question of right or wrong, it's different levels of expertise. You're never wrong for telling people the truth. I know. One devotee, he became a prominent leader in Krishna consciousness movement. He was a student in university in Oregon, USA. And he was walking down the street, and a very simple
Sankirtan devotee approached him. Lotion Das. And very simple devotee. And he would just carry the Bhagavad Gita and he would approach a person and just say, Krishna Supreme Personality Godhead. And then he would read from the Bhagavad Gita. So he approached this person, the student. He said, this is the Bhagavad Gita. Listen to this. Sarva Dharma Prachata, Vale Kamshadam Krishna. Abandon all varieties of religion, just surrender to Krishna. As soon as he said that, the person who's talking to just collapsed on the ground. Just overwhelmed by the presence of Krishna. So the person bought the book and ran 2 kilometers all the way back to his room at the university and started reading. So. Now, we don't tell our distributors to go out and distribute like that. But still, it's not wrong. It's just that the distributors are endeavoring to find the more and more effective means of giving the medicine to people who don't want it. So please understand this point. Was it a good idea? Huh? Then be thankful. That's how to be humble. Thank you, thank you. Yes, that's a good point. Even if you may not think it's a good point, still you thank the person for making some endeavor to help you. And of course, advice from seniors should be cherished. But sometimes even your so-called equals and even your juniors, someone's just been here 1 month, they're your junior. They might be able to give you some good advice. I listen to others. Sometimes. Devotees hear me. You know, I think it's a good idea that we do such and such. I listen. I'll say, who are you to present this idea to me? Understand the mind does its own thing. It's a creature of itself, you know. Don't become so upset by what your mind does. Gradually, by your focusing on devotional service, your mind will come under control. But don't become depressed. It's a wild creature, isn't it? Like a wild animal. Even when you put the animal in a cage, still you have to be careful. It can escape any moment. That's what the Bhagavatam instructs about the mind. Always keep an eye on it. even if you brought it under control. The greatest mistake is to take your mind so seriously. Don't do puja to your mind. Oh, my mind. You are me. You are my everything. Devotees don't take their minds so seriously until their mind starts thinking about Krishna. Then you take it seriously. Thinking about Krishna also means thinking about how to serve Krishna, Krishna's service. When your mind starts acting like that, then you can take it a little bit seriously. That stage will come. Everyone has seen persons trying to practice Krishna consciousness who just take their mind too seriously? Yes. Doesn't work for them so well because they can't get it into their heads that they're not the mind. I think it's so important. My mind is feeling like this. That's the reality. No, it's not the reality. Through devotional service, you'll detach yourself from that mad mind. It takes some time to see. Okay? Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.
Probably the same way to Swanathu.